Other Directions Magazine podcast. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Anthony Robinson in what is becoming a series of interviews about the development of his upcoming massive open online course, his MOOC, called Maps and the Geospatial Revolution. I spoke to Dr. Robinson in February, and last week at the Association of American Geographers meeting in Los Angeles, he provided an update on how things are going. So it seemed like a good time to check in and see what's new. How are things?
Things are really great, Adina. I've got over 9,500 people in the class have enrolled, so.
Wow, did you have any sense of what kind of numbers you were going to get at this point?
Well, Coursera told us that it's normal for a course to launch, like on the opening day of class, to be something between 40 and 50,000 people, and I kind of doubted that that was ever going to be possible for a little geography class, but I'm starting to believe that's actually possible now.
And it sounds like people are signing up. You know, as more people hear about it, as it probably gets closer, people are getting more excited.
Yeah, the pattern so far seems to be that the closer it gets to the date of launch, like with our other classes that are about to start, one of them is going to start in May on art. That class seems to be picking up in registration pace. So it's a little bit different than the way I would have expected it might be.
Right, so you've now got your hands are on the Coursera platform that you're working with, and
yep.
How's that going?
Well, it's been a bit of a challenge for us. It's a lot different than what we're used to working with, which is Drupal here at Penn State, and then Angel, which kind of integrates with it a little bit. We're getting our head around how to do a class the way we like to do classes at Penn State, and so that's taken a little bit of time. One thing that we were kind of baffled by, really, is that it turns out it's kind of hard to do a chronological ordering in a Coursera course. So, and that's, you know, just the lesson one is week one and lesson two is week two, and we have like sort of a flow from start to finish for a class. The way that they typically do it is by content type, and it's kind of awkward to do it that way. So we figured out a way to do it the way we like, which uses chronology throughout the class. So just there are some things like that are just different about the system. One of the exciting things about the platform, too, is it opens up different possibilities that we haven't considered before, one of which is you can actually have Coursera automatically assign peer review assignments. So it'll go and pick five random people, for example, and five random assignments out of a pool and assign them to a student to do peer review. So it's got some neat stuff that we don't have at all in our other systems.
While you're working with the Coursera system, do you think of it more as a content management system like Drupal or more like a learning management system like Angel?
I confess I don't feel like I'm deep enough into it to understand exactly the nuances of it. I think that it's somewhere between the two in the sense that it's got some clearly aimed at learners types of functions like the peer review thing I just described and the discussion forums that you can link to videos and all that kind of stuff. Whereas agnostic content management systems like Drupal out of the box don't really have that kind of thing built into it. At the same time, it's clearly not designed around all of what's known about teaching online and because things like chronology are hard to enforce. So it's sort of a between two worlds, I think, at this moment.
Right, and it's still evolving, too. It's relatively young in its life.
Yeah, like things are changing constantly. So that's one thing that's a little different about this platform is that we get updates every couple weeks, and they're like, we've added this feature, and we have this way now to lock down tests, for example, so that you don't accidentally edit them in the middle of the session. And so they're adding things nonstop, which is good and also challenging, as you can imagine, as you're trying to plan a class, and then the requirements keep changing.
Right, your platform is changing underneath you.
It's like GIS.
Well, actually, we're very familiar with that. So how is the course content coming? Are the weeks laid out, and are the assignments laid out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Back in late February, I guess right after I talked with you last time, I flew out to California with my learning designer, Aaron Long, and we went to Redlands for a couple days. And there I presented my kind of straw man outline. I'd come up with an outline that I thought would be workable for the course. And I'd also identified all of the competencies that I thought were relevant from the body of knowledge and GIS&T body of knowledge and the Department of Labor, GTCM, and I had kind of mapped them across this course. And I had asked for David DiBiase and Joseph Kursky and Angie Lee to just critique me. I want another set of eyes in these things and hammer me out on that. That was really good feedback to have. It kind of let me go away with some really good ideas of what I should pursue and what kind of held up to that scrutiny. I've got five lessons, of course, in the class, so 5 weeks. And I am sticking with the initial outline that I put on Coursera, which is lesson one is covering the geospatial revolution, kind of what is it, what is geography, for example. That's one of the things I'm trying to answer in there. The second lesson on how I think spatial is special, and talking, getting people to actually think spatially a little bit without drilling them over the head with a lot of jargon. I'm going to focus on understanding spatial data after that, doing some spatial analysis, and then finally focusing on making good maps through storytelling. And I've written and designed graphical content for 4 out of those 5 lessons now, so I'm almost done with the first draft of all of the writing and graphical stuff, which has really occupied most of my time in the last, I guess, month and a half or so. That's been what I've focused a lot of my effort on. The next step that I'll take is to focus then on developing really short video lectures to provide some context to each of those written lessons. The idea that I'm trying to pursue here is that the video stuff shouldn't be required for somebody to be successful in the class. We know that relying a lot on video lectures is not a good way to do an online course, so I'm going to try to use them as more of a MSG for the class. A little enhancement. And then if you didn't ever want to see me talk, you can just read through the lessons. You've got good graphics. I've been putting a lot of effort into making all my own maps and graphics. It's something I like to do, so I don't have to deal with copyright, obviously, but also because I can tailor the examples to kind of the hopefully more fun kind of examples that I've been able to come up with.
And I'm guessing that the content that you're talking about that you've written is really sort of technology agnostic. It's more the basic principles here.
Yeah, it really is. So that brings up a good point that one of the reactions that I've seen from a decent number of people has been like, this class is all about software, right? And it's really, really not about software. And I think that'll be really evident once the class is out there for everybody to go look at and critique directly. But I've been writing about what do geographers do, how is spatial data different than other kinds of data. When you're talking about mapping, you're talking about dealing with representation and dealing with different audiences who might consume those maps. That's really the kind of the point of the class. I mean, it's a geography course, really. It's a mapping class, helping people rethink what maps are and what they can do. That's kind of the goal. It's not a GIS class in the traditional sense of what that means, which is a semester-long, 3-credit, lab-intense experience where you're going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out data models and dealing with common keys and things like that. That's really not the point of this course, and I think there will be, I'm sure there will be, many other geography MOOCs, and I'm expecting that there will be some really good basics of GIS kinds of classes that might come on later. I'm hoping my class is kind of the thing that happens before those things and maybe inspire somebody to go deeper like that.
So it sounds like there's a bit of a disconnect, or people's expectations aren't quite meshing if they're asking questions like that. I mean, when I read over the course, it was very clear to me that you weren't going to learn a piece of software.
Yeah, well, I think it's just I can't actually attribute to anything. So I'm not really sure why people assume that. I mean, it certainly hasn't been the overwhelming response. It's been the overwhelming response from the small number of geographers who engage with me on Twitter. So that's actually nowhere near 9,000 people.
And that's not a representative sample.
Yeah, and it's a really, really, right, those are the people that I follow on Twitter. So it's really just a self-fulfilling kind of thing. I think it's just the perspective that some in the geospatial education realm have kind of assumed, and maybe that's because the course sounds like it would be a GIS class, I guess, in terms of its title. There have been some prospective students who have emailed me and were like, hey, am I going to learn the Google Maps API for such and such? And I'm like, well, no, I mean, that's not really the point of the class. It would be really hard to do that in 5 weeks, even if that was the whole thing. So there have been some prospective students who have taken that approach, but it seems like most of the prospective students who have asked me questions, like sending me email or whatever, have really wanted to know, you know, what are the kind of basic things they would take away from this course. And a common thread there seems to be people who work in an industry that's kind of tangentially related to GIS or geospatial stuff or geography, like in architecture or planning or something else. I guess a lot of planners use GIS, of course, but some people in planning don't really engage with it. And they're wondering if this class will help them understand how geographers do things. And that's really kind of the target audience. That's the people I want to reach. So I think most of the misunderstanding is largely on the other geospatial educator side of things and not in terms of the students who are actually signing up for the course.
That's a really interesting point, because as you were saying that, I was thinking how many people who are geospatial professionals, I would love to take a MOOC that basically explains to me what surveying is.
Yeah.
because yeah. I sort of vaguely know, but I've never really taken it, and I really want to understand it better. So that's sort of a shout out to anybody thinking about doing a MOOC.
Well, and you can imagine that the person who designs that, who's a surveyor, would have a whole bunch of surveyors who were like, well, are you going to use a Trimble unit? And what are, you know, like they would start grilling them about, are you
jump
using,
directly to the technology.
Yeah, yeah. Are you using my favorite technology? And well, I mean, no. And I've been a little bit surprised at some of the reaction like that. And part of it's, I'm sure, brought on by perception around my relationship with Esri on this. So now's a good time to maybe address that. And I could say that, I mean, this is really just a collaboration of two groups that have allied interests in this one sense. There's no money changing hands at all, just to put that to bed immediately. So nobody's paying me to do anything. They really should, but nobody's paying me to do anything like this. I mean,
Penn State is not paying you to put together
the
course?
No, Penn State pays me to do my job, and that's part of my job is doing this class. But Esri's not paying me any money.
Okay, I just want to make that very clear.
No, Esri's not paying me to do anything with their software. What they've agreed to do is to provide technical support when the course launches in ArcGIS Online. So there's going to be thousands of people hitting this thing, and if there are account issues or permissions with accessing certain tools and things like that, I don't have to triage that. That's a major, major, major concern when scaling assignments to lots and lots of people. The other thing they've helped me with is figuring out kind of what's possible in lab assignments. And those are all things that I'm going to take and shape on my own. I mean, I'm the leader of this class, full stop. There's no content oversight by Esri or anything like that. They're not trying to design a Penn State class for Penn State or anything silly like that. I'm taking advantage of their skills in the sense that that group of people, the Ed team, has done a lot of work in GIS education. So I do want a lot of eyeballs on this before I launch it. And I am using them to get some feedback on what I'm doing along the way so that I'm not just doing this in a vacuum and going to find out that I've misexplained something or something like that really badly. So I'm really excited about this because it's been enormously helpful to have some initial feedback from other people who are not really knee-deep in it like I am, and also to have the support from a group that's willing to kind of pave the way to make sure that lab assignments can actually work for almost anybody, anywhere in the world. That's really a big criteria for me. Something like 60% of the students who take a MOOC with Coursera are located overseas. And so the assumptions we can make about what kinds of technology they have available to them are not very high. I mean, we know that they have a web browser. That's about it. And even using something like ArcGIS Online, which uses JavaScript or whatever, which should be cross-platform and should work on most circumstances, we're not entirely sure that that will be flawless.
Right, across all the different possible.
Yeah, yeah. It's impossible to predict it. So I've had some criticism from some people in the open source community, and I've worked for 10 years in a research center that does nothing but develop on and develop new open source geospatial software, so I don't need to be educated about that. I'm under no restriction to discuss other platforms, and when you see the course, I'll be talking about OpenStreetMap and lots of other things. I'll be pointing to QGIS as a thing to download to try on your own, etc. So there's no editorial control, I guess maybe that's the best way to put it, over the course by Esri or anything like that. It's my class. And I'm really excited to have their help in making sure that one of the most important parts, in my opinion, is to have a really stable, predictable, making your first map and sharing your first map kind of experience. And I do think that ArcGIS Online helps. I mean, that's, to me, the only thing I could be using right now that would really sort of suit this purpose.
Are you at a point now where you're thinking about what the exercises are going to be?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've got rough ideas for all five of those in terms of their theme. And one thing I did do at Redlands with Joseph Kursky was I went through all the things I wanted to do in labs, and he helped me see kind of what's in the platform to support it and what's not. And then we worked on maybe we could use this population data set, maybe we can use these earthquakes, etc. So we've worked through what the basic core objectives would be for each one of those labs. He's going to take a first stab at writing the instructions for them since he's the all-seeing, all-knowing guru of that platform. And then I take them from there.
So, okay, so are all the exercises going to be based on ArcGIS Online?
Yeah, there will be one for each week, so five total lab exercises. There will be something right before the class starts, too, that we have people go in and just put a pin somewhere and say where they live and kind of what they're interested in the class and taking the class for. And so we'll do a little preamble like that. And that will also hopefully give us opportunity to triage some of the tech support stuff right away.
Right, just make sure all the platforms are actually
Yep, so you have to think like that with a MOOC. I mean, you can't be like, well, maybe this will work. I mean, you just can't. We talked last time about the Georgia Tech incident with using Google Docs for 40,000 people. That's kind of a canonical example of how bad things can go if it goes badly. So I expect that other people will come up with MOOCs in geography that use lots of platforms. They roll their own, but you'd have to maintain your server. You'd have to use a cloud resource like Amazon, for example, and you have to be really sure that everything's going to work on day one, because you will get literally tens of thousands of emails if it doesn't work.
Yeah, not a headache you're looking for right now.
No.
Okay, so what's on your list to tackle in the coming weeks?
So what's coming up now, as I'm going to transition off of writing the initial content, making the graphics, I'm going to start working pretty quickly on scaffolding together the short video lectures. And my idea is to have maybe two or three 5-minute talks each of the weeks. So that's a total of maximum of like 15 5-minute videos. And that's a lot of work to put together, edit everything. They end up being relatively short slideshows. I mean, they're only 5 minutes a piece, and because of the way I've designed the content around kind of chunks of information, I'm not too daunted by that. Having written it in the first place, that to me has been the hard part, kind of filtering out all the things that I would like to do and just focusing on some that I think I can actually accomplish. Making those videos, sort of the workflow for creating those videos and editing them, that'll be a challenge. And then once I've got the video stuff ready to go, I'm going to move on to assessment from there. And one thing that's challenging about this, if you want to use any software aside from Coursera's stuff, let's say you did do a desktop GIS course someday and you ran your own, used QGIS or ArcGIS or whatever, how would you grade those assignments? Would you create a Dropbox or something to calculate submissions somehow? And how would you communicate that to the Coursera platform? That's a really non-trivial, non-solved problem as far as we can tell. So we've had to think about assessments already as things that we can give them that will ask questions about workflow, for example. If you didn't do the lab, but you got the workflow question correct, you know, do I care that you didn't do the lab? Maybe not. If the point of learning something is to understand a way of doing it, and you've already gathered that from my lecture materials, your own self-study or whatever, then I can kind of let go of this, did you actually submit a map for this assignment or not? So that's an example of having to kind of rethink some of the assumptions that we might really make by default as GIS educators. You know, I have to be able to see that you did a map. What if I can't? So then what? Well, maybe I can give you a poorly designed map and ask you to answer questions about what's wrong with it and what's right with it. And then if you understand that concept, then does it matter that you went and did the lab or not? Maybe not. So that's kind of the direction we're going to take with the assessments.
It's almost a bit competency-based.
Yeah, it ends up being that way. And that's kind of challenging to work on, but also liberating in a sense that I kind of released myself from worrying about, do I have peer review of every lab assignment? I mean, that seems like the overuse of peer review in 5 weeks to me. I'd like to do that maybe once for the storytelling one, where it's a little bit more nebulous and where a rubric could be established really nicely. But if it's the first lab, like the first lab, for example, I'm envisioning people looking at different ways of measuring population, looking at different scales, just understanding some very basic stuff about overlay, for example, right? Really what I want them there to do is to recognize different types of data sets. So I could ask questions about that rather than worrying about, did I collect a finished map link from a certain user and matching that back to the gradebook somehow? Because that's where you'd have to, with any platform, you know, somehow get ArcGIS Online or whatever it is to send a user ID over and a deliverable or something. You know, what is that? That's engineering that would be really substantial and probably would not work the first time.
And there would be 10,000 of these coming in.
Yeah, right. And where do they go and do you keep them and all that kind of stuff? We have to think in terms of competencies instead. That's been kind of liberating in a sense to not have to. At first, it was sort of stopping me. Like, you know, what do we do with assessments? I have to know that they did this mapping assignment. Right. Well, I mean, what if we just asked clever questions in a quiz or something that showed that they had to have done the assignment to know those things? Or if they know them already, then that's fine by me.
And let me just jump in here. There are certainly educators moving in that direction anyway.
Yeah. I mean, Western Governors University does all competency-based learning, right?
Right.
So it's certainly something I'm interested in. I'm looking at this as a chance to try that a little bit. And part of that's been brought on, like I mentioned, because of the technical limitations of trying to scale typical lab assignment in GIS up to 40,000 people at once.
Right. How do you think students are going to react to this competency evaluation? I personally love the idea, and I love the way that Western Governors seems to work.
I suspect that some students will think it makes a lot of sense. Well, yeah, if I know how to do this thing, doesn't matter that I read the thing and I watched the video and clicked on the stuff, you know, if I get the quiz question right. Yeah, I suspect other students who are used to education in the more classic sense are going to be frustrated because they want credit for having just submitted something. You know what I mean?
Right. Or that they could go back and find the answer in the text.
Right, right. So that's, I'm guessing there will be kind of a two-tailed distribution of people that are like, well, yeah, duh. And then others who really want credit for time served. Yeah, a lot of students, especially undergraduates these days, kind of look at classes like that, like, well, I was there, so I should get an A. I would argue that if you know how to make a good map, that means I've been successful in my mapping class. So I don't really care how you get from point A to point B to do that. As long as I can assess and know that you do know how to do that, I'm happy. So to that end, one thing I'm going to try to do in this class is give something that's an analog to the final exam right in the first week, right up front, and then provide a little self-assessment to the large number of geospatial people that I know are taking the class and say, gosh, you got 100% on these 10 questions.
Maybe you already know everything.
You already know all this stuff. Why don't you go and do a nice thing and help people in the forums who are struggling? Or do extra peer review. You know, I'm gonna try to provide an outlet for people who are already experts, because despite me warning them not to take it, I already know there's lots taking it.
I know that too, yes.
Yeah, so that's... We talked about a little bit, David DiBiase and I talked a little bit about how do you, like, can we come up with some way to leverage that? And that's kind of a fun thing to try in this class, I think, will be to somehow motivate the people that already are experts. First of all, tell them that they are. Say, yeah, you know what, you aced this quiz right up front. The chance of you not doing well in the rest of the course is very low. So, therefore, why don't you become a leader?
Let's give you a different role.
Give you a different role, yeah. And maybe in future iterations of the course, I can... once I see if this works or not, if there's a way for me to leverage that more explicitly and provide roles, for example, to course mentors or whatever, that would be really neat. And maybe that's something that would help people demonstrate some leadership skills toward GISP, for example.
I think that's great. This is probably not something you were thinking about when you were first conceiving of this, but here's another sort of layer that's folding in on top of this.
Yeah, definitely not something we were considering before, but as I was seeing in the first few weeks, especially, lots of geospatial people saying, oh my god, I'm signing up for this class, and I'm going, oh no, don't take this class.
That was my reaction too.
It's not for you. It's not designed, you're going to be bored, or you're going to be like, well, yeah, I know what classification is and I know what a choropleth map is, but okay, I mean, if that's what people want to do, I don't want to stop them either. So, and I can't, it's an open thing to anybody, so why should I even fight that? And instead, how about, what if there's a clever way for me to identify those people up front and help them self-identify if they don't already realize that, and then
leverage that energy,
somehow empower those people to take an active role or just ask, right? I mean, what could hurt for me just saying, hey, please consider being an active discussant, or doing extra peer review, or doing a little bit of tech support for someone who just can't figure out how to click on something. Little stuff like that, and maybe that's a bit of ownership in the class that an expert might actually appreciate.
And if that could be used toward professional development or actual points for GISP or other kinds of things, that
right.
would be even better.
I mean, if there would be some way for me, maybe in future, not the first time out, but if it seems like a lasting thing, to do some sort of badging around that geospatial mentor in a class or what, I don't know, that's a very awkward way of calling it.
But somehow recognize.
Yeah, somehow recognizing that and giving some micro credential for it. I mean, just like finishing a MOOC gets you kind of a micro credential, right? I think there's an opening there. Man, this would be way beyond just a geospatial MOOC. It could be any kind of topic area to leverage the content experts who you know are going to show up anyway.
It sounds like a lot of this goes back again to that setting, that those expectations of all the different kinds of students that are going to show up.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the response rate now is kind of overwhelming. I was hoping for 1,000 people, and it'll definitely pass 10,000 people like this week. I know just a little bit about them in the sense that people have tweeted about it in different languages, for example. So it's been retweeted in Greek, Swedish, German, Spanish, Ukrainian, and probably others, but I'm not always able to go and look up and find all mentions of it. But there's clearly a global reach, and there's tons of people talking about it in English who are in other countries, like Iran, for example. I've seen some Iranians talking about it. Getting a good sense of maybe there are 700 geospatial people out of that 9,500 and some that are in there today. Who are the other 8,000 and some
right.
in the class? Those are probably the people I am trying to reach. You know what I mean? I'm guessing that that's actually I'm still doing the right thing in terms of targeting the class at a more basic kind of goal. But I'm fascinated to see and a little bit terrified to see what happens when the class opens. Do people? Is there a majority that think it's too basic, or is it still too hard for some people? You know, getting the mixture right is really hard when you're not controlling the intake, which is what we're used to.
At university, right?
Sure. Yeah. We go through all this effort to, like, shape the enrollment. We are selective. We say GREs. We don't want people who aren't professionals, et cetera. Like, I oversee a lot of that effort here for our online program. So when you open it up to literally anybody who has a web browser and who can put an email address and a username into Coursera, we don't. You lose that control. So
clearly, that's on your mind as sort of a little bit of a concern. Is there anything else that you sort of got on your worry list right now?
I know that ArcGIS Online handles a million people a day, a million users every day. So that makes me feel good. But I sort of want to see 40,000 people hit it all at once. I just if they need to count stuff or anything like that. Like I want to make sure that actually really really works. I'm really confident that the right people are paying attention to it, though, and that there's a lot of institutional support to make sure that if there's some technical thing that comes up that we can nuke it really quickly. But that's still kind of a lingering concern of mine. What kind of plan B can you set up for this kind of class? It's almost impossible to imagine, right? I mean, what would it be?
Paper?
Yeah. I mean, there is no plan B, right? I mean, there would be no more plan B than there would be in your actual resident GIS course, right? I mean, you could try different software, but you'd have to redo every single lab, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
You have to trust that what you chose is something that will work.
and you're not really going to know if it does work until everybody starts banging on it.
Yeah, and there's no way to beta test it, right? I mean, you can't get 40,000 of your friends to go and try it. It does seem to be that one really common thing that works well, and one thing that allays my fears a bit, is that as long as MOOC instructors are really good at communicating when things don't go right and taking care of the problem quickly if there is a massive one, then students seem to be somewhat forgiving about that. So the Georgia Tech case is kind of the worst case example. One of the reasons why it went south is that it took a long time for them to react,
right?
At least to react visibly to their class. Considering the amount of feedback you get instantly when something doesn't go right in one of these courses, I can't imagine waiting 3 days to tell anybody what's wrong.
Right. Now, it sounds like things are well on track, and maybe we'll check in another month or so and see what the state of affairs is then.
That would be great.
All right. Well, thanks for your time today, Anthony.
Thanks so much, Adina.
I've been speaking with Dr. Anthony Robinson about the development of his course, his MOOC, Maps and the Geospatial Revolution. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.